I'm Louise Darmody and I'm interviewing Michael Young for the New South Wales State Library's Oral History Collection. Today, Michael will share with us his life story and particularly his experience of the repatriation of Mungo Man and ancestral remains at Mungo National Park. The interview is taking place at Michael's home in Redcliffe on the 18th of April, 2018. Michael, when and where were you born?
Hello, Louise. I was born in Bankstown Hospital in Sydney on the 11th of January, 1961.
And can you remember the first time you heard a story about Mungo Lady or Mungo Man?
That wasn't until much later in the piece when I was speaking to my aunts and uncles. My uncle has been working out there for over 20 years.
And what's his name?
That was Andy Johnson. And he told me that's where he worked. And some of those stories then started to make sense. Some of our history, some of our movements of the family from different areas in New South Wales, which was government policy. So we started to put together a history from our viewpoint from history from Sydney and start to put our movements together there because we have such a large family.
And about what age did you start having an interest in these stories?
That would have been at the age of 12, but that was more of a general idea of how Aboriginal people were treated, being one of the only Aboriginal people in primary school. I felt I was isolated and there were certain attitudes that were coming through at the age of 12. And that's environmental. Friends of mine that weren't friends of mine and so on and so forth. So.
And what particular stories about Mungo Man and Mungo Lady interested you?
Oh, the scientific, because I tend to be a little bit analytical these days. I've always been a little bit like that. There was the science behind it, the 42,000 years for Mungo Man alone, 36,000 years for Mungo Woman, who was repatriated in 92 and brought back. And all of the history that was putting together a picture of what was happening 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 years ago out at Mungo was fascinating for me. And considering my family's connection, that even spurred my interest even further.
And was there one particular uncle or auntie or someone who was the keeper of the stories?
Yes, there was. There was one particular aunt, and we call her Sister Girl, but her full name is Patricia Johnson.
And did your mum know much about Mungo Man, Mungo Lady?
She had an interesting relationship because she was brought up on two missions. She was born at Menindee, raised at Lake Ajalego or Murrumbidge Mission, which is still there today. So for her, all of that was more trauma for her. She didn't want us to relive it, any of those experiences that she had lived through in her previous years.
But you could talk to your auntie, Trish.
Which is a very Aboriginal way because our aunts and uncles are usually in charge of our education.
So can you remember the first story she told you?
Mum?
No, your auntie.
My aunt was so broad. We used to talk on the phone until the battery used to die. So you can imagine there'd be like 3 or 4 hour sessions and it wouldn't be just Aunt Trish. It would be my Aunt Valda in Western Australia. It would be my Aunt Priscilla. It would be my uncle, Andy. So talking to them for hours on end about family, about tradition, about our connection, where we are, where we're living today, where we had lived in the past, birthplaces, etc. My grandmother born in Pooncarie. So, yeah, it was fascinating for me because I grew up in this protected environment in Sydney. Anything west of the Blue Mountains, really, I didn't know that much about until later years.
So when you started getting really interested in your family background, What are some of the stories you'd tell your mates at school or whoever that you knew that you cared for, that you wanted them to know more about you and who you were?
Imparting that information was difficult. You've got to remember that was the 70s and the 80s. So a lot of people were tied up in their Anzacs and so on and so forth, and lots of flag waving. I think 88 was probably a catalyst because it was the bicentennial. I didn't attend the bicentennial and the fireworks. I attended the demonstration. They walked down in Sydney, and that's where we attended, myself and my first wife. So for me, that was part of the journey, and people were asking questions then. It had to be a moment like that before those questions were brought up. And it was interesting because a lot of the time my friends didn't see me as Aboriginal. They just saw me as one of the pack, one of the boys. So we used to go off and surf and play sports, and we even did some sailing down in Botany Bay and joined the sailing club down there. So there was a whole lot of things that we used to do. Aboriginality never really came up. It was never one of those things.
And you didn't share your family story with them?
Well, I suppose because I was never asked. Some of my close friends did ask about that, and I did touch on it, but I think their attention span was wanting.
And just getting back to Mungo Man and the repatriation of Mungo Man and other remains last year in November,
mm-hmm.
What involvement did you have with that, bringing Mungo Man home?
I was on the planning committee for the repatriation. I attended numerous meetings, either here or in Canberra. I attended a handover, which happened 2 years previously, and that was at ANU, and we handed over the remains to the National Museum, and they were kept in situ for 2 years until such time as we were ready to repatriate.
So can you tell me what happened that week of repatriation, what you did that week?
What I did that week, besides the numerous interviews and et cetera, phone calls, newspapers and all sorts of things there, because I was nominated as the media person through the AAG, which is the Aboriginal Advisory Group for Mungo. I also attended a number of meetings about what would be happening at different points, which I sort of relinquished responsibility, because what happened in the Yampa country down at Hay, that was Roy Kennedy's. He was one of the members. The other member was another fella. He was Muddy, Barry Pearce. And Barry Pearce looked after what happened in Muddy country, which is down at Balranald. So they were the two main stops from Canberra. They also did a stop in Wagga, but that was Wiradjuri country, and they're not part of the 3TGs. But they did have a welcome and ceremony there also, because they knew the significance of this fellow going through there and the others.
And so where were you at the beginning? What was the start for you of that week?
Well, for that week, I didn't go to Canberra. I felt that, and this was also what Aunt's view was that they were taken from our country and that we will receive them on our country. We didn't need to be part of the procession.
So what's your mob called?
We are Parkinji, which is the anglicised name is Barkinji, using the B. But Parkinji, which is along the Darling River, which includes Pooncarry, and Parenti, which also goes back through my great-great-grandfather, which is Manfred Tommy. He was brought up on Manfred Station, which ran into Garpang Lake, which is also part of the Willandra World Heritage Area.
So what happened for you on that big day when the Mungo Man hearse rolled in eventually?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
With all those remains? Can you describe what it was like for you?
For me, suddenly I had to be responsible. I had to be an elder. I had to show my family, the boys in particular, because we preferred to have it as men's business. We had to bring those boxes out of the hearse, because that would be the first time that they're back on country. So for us to place those boxes on country was important. We then proceeded to smoke and allow the smoke to run over the boxes to clear anything that they have picked up on their journeys home and also on the way to Canberra years earlier.
And other memories you have of that day? So that happened.
Numerous.
And then there were numerous speeches.
There were numerous speeches and performances, etc. And I wrote a speech with my aunts and their kids, and all women. I was the only male there. which made me sort of a bit of a odd one out. But that was good because all of that speech that I wrote down was approved of right there and then by the aunts. And for me, that was an important part of the process.
And which aunts were they?
That was Aunt Lottie, Aunt Priscilla, and Aunt Patricia Johnson.
And they're all your mother's sisters?
Yes, my mother's sisters, two of them. Lottie is my great aunt. And then there was her daughter, Brenda, and Patricia's daughter, Nello, who works at the primary school in as an Aboriginal education officer in Baronga.
So can you remember a few of the points from that speech that you wrote?
I think it was trying to get to the truth of history rather than the dressed up history that we've been taught through the years, whether it be primary school or high school or a lot of the literature that was around. It never really addressed what we as Aboriginal people suffered, never addresses the frontier wars, never includes the policies of government of removal, doesn't call missions what they should be called, which are concentration camps. So I think there was a whole lot of truths that we needed to impart on that day because it was such a pinnacle moment. And it could have also been representative as a catalyst for change. And I felt that that needed to be represented. Once we told the truth about it, we needed to then move on and have those relationships. But only when the truth has been told that we can move forward.
So that was obviously a very moving experience, making that speech and working with your aunts on the speech.
Yes.
Were there any other memories you have of that day that really stand out?
I think the fact that we had so many other people from different tribes of the area that were there on the day. And I think the knowledge and the awareness of how large a moment this was. You know, we've had moments in our history. We had Mabo, for example, which was a great decision. We had the Uluru Statement the previous year, which, and that was how it was treated. We had those marches across the bridge in Sydney. You know, we had those moments where optimism was at its height. And I felt that that day was something that we needed to be part of as well, that it could be something that we could actually progress something better for the community and society as a whole.
So if you were talking to your descendants,
mm-hmm.
They'll be able to hear your story from the State Library, probably on their own computers.
Yes.
In not that far away.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say you came away from on that day with? What do you want them to know about from that day?
I think the love that came through, resonated right across the board, is that we were there for one reason, which was for the right reasons. And it was a gathering. It was a big gathering at a place that hasn't seen a big gathering like that for such a long time. So the love, the respect, the possibilities that things are achievable, that we need to address, that will improve our lot. And I think that's a big message right there, isn't it? You know, we need to continue that fight. It's not the type of fight that we used to have years ago when I was marching down streets and canvassing people and doing all this sort of thing. You know, that whole environment's changed now. A lot of that can be taken on the internet. So it has changed, but I don't think the cause has changed. And I think Indigenous rights really need to be addressed in this country because we might be going through another style of assimilation, just the final phase of it, which is to ignore any of the traditional owners. And I don't think that's going to serve our people well at all into the future.
And on the Saturday night after the handback, there was a huge concert in Mildura that was, and I've got a flyer here, it was called the Mungo Man Return to Country Concert.
Yes.
People from all across Australia, right, and all across the world. What were some of the standouts for you for that evening?
That evening? Oh, well, Shane Howard, for example, lead singer from Goanna, Solid Rock, which is a great message, musical message. And I think the majority of the performers that were there really got into the feel of what it was all about, how large this was. Some were down there also for their own reasons because they had family in the area. So they had different reasons for coming down. And of course, that was also included in that concert. The performances, the dancers were a highlight. They were coming from Western Australia, they were coming from Arnhem Land, they were coming from even in South Australia. So we had this incredible gathering of Indigenous peoples that donated a lot of their own time to come here and do this for us. And for me, that was a great message right there, is that it's not just about the dollar. This is something that our culture was known about for a long time.